Welcome to the Herd Quitter Podcast. I'm your host, Jared Lumen. On this show, we talk to farmers and ranchers who aren't afraid to think for themselves and do things a little bit differently. We hope these guests will challenge you to look at your farms and ranches in a new way and result in a more profitable and enjoyable business for you and your family. Welcome back to the Herd Quitter Podcast. I asked Kit Farrow to come back on and talk about an article he wrote in the PCC update a couple of weeks ago. I think that was a week or two ago, actually, on creating a competitive advantage in your business. If you haven't already, I'd recommend you sign up for that PCC update. You can find it on the homepage of their farrowcattle.com website. Just scroll to the bottom and sign up for it there. There's a ton of great information. But this article in particular jumped out to me as something that's just really intriguing and relevant to all of us as producers, is trying to create a competitive advantage in our business. And so, Kit, thanks for coming on and welcome back to the Herd Quitter Podcast.
Thank you, Jared.
I think it's kind of a interesting topic because obviously I would imagine every producer wants to have a competitive advantage. You know, if someone says, you know, this isn't a, I will give you a competitive advantage, no one would say no. But how many people actually recognize that they can have a competitive advantage? And when I think probably most producers in their mind think the only way to be competitive or have a competitive advantage is to just get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and continue to scale, you know, that drop that cost of production. But you kind of pointed out a couple ways maybe that we can be competitive in other ways. And I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on, you know, how producers of any size can create competitive advantages in their business.
Okay. Well, I've thought about this since you've asked me to do this, so I've expanded on what I put in the weekly email that you're referring to. And I'd like to start out by helping our listeners visualize what a competitive advantage is. So I'd like to say, visualize, if you will, two basketball players. One is 6'6" and the other's 5'6". Which one has a competitive advantage? You know, that's kind of helps us see, okay, in the world of basketball, being 6'6" is definitely an advantage over somebody like me that's 5'7".
I was going to say that's like us standing next to each other. You just got to imagine me standing next to Kit.
Yeah, there you go. If all basket players are 6'6", which most of them are, it becomes more difficult for any of them to have a competitive advantage. And, you know, that kind of leads me into my next thought is, in order to have a competitive advantage, you must be different. I don't know if it's possible to have a competitive advantage if you're just like everybody else. If all basket players are equal in size and ability, nobody has a competitive advantage. Now let's talk about, instead of basketball, let's talk about business. Unfortunately, most people in all businesses, as far as I'm concerned, are afraid to be different. You know, that's a human nature trait. We just don't want to stand out from the crowd or stand out from the herd. We want to have that advantage, but we don't want to be different. And, you know, let's get down to ag producers on the farm, on the ranch producers. Who is our competition? We don't really like to think that we're competing with our neighbor, but we are. You know, whether we like it or not, other producers in the same business of production as we are our competitors. Let me ask you this. What's the opposite of having a competitive advantage?
I suppose a disadvantage, some sort of something holding you back.
And that's what I would have thought, but I thought about this a little more. I think the opposite of having that advantage is being average. You know, average is the herd. Average is the crowd. In commodity agriculture, almost everybody is average, and therefore average is break even at best. You know, if you're doing a little bit better than break even, you're doing very well in commodity agriculture. If you and I or anybody aspires to be successful, greatly successful, we cannot be average. We must be better than average. We must be different. In the article, I talked about having a competitive advantage is good. You know, I think in a lot of businesses, especially agriculture, it may be the difference between mere survival and being successful. And I think all of us, even though we don't want to think we can, all of us can have that competitive advantage if we want to. We just don't want to think outside the box far enough to see what it is. There are two types of competitive advantages in most businesses, including cow-calf production, farming, ranching, whatever. And the first one is a cost advantage, and the second is a differential advantage. And these are the two that I spent the most time on in our weekly email. A cost advantage exists when a business is able to deliver the same product as competitors, but at a much lower cost. And this is so obvious that most people miss it. You know, it requires a lower cost of production. Low input cow-calf producers, for example, have a big competitive advantage over status quo or average cow-calf producers. Many of our customers, Faro Cattle Company customers, have a cost of production that is less than half that of the national average. And that's it's not hard to do that. It's just how you structure your business to have a lower cost of production. And if your cost of production is half what everybody else's is, your break-even point is half what everybody else's is. That's a huge competitive advantage.
Yeah. And on the cost side of it, I feel like, you know, people, if they do assume there's a competitive advantage, it is probably on lowering costs. But rather than lowering, like the way they strive on average to achieve a lower cost of production is through scaling, spreading their overhead over more units of production as opposed to just reducing overhead entirely or something. And a lot of times that scaling is higher risk, higher stress, more workload, more, you know, everything else. If it's not necessarily maybe putting you in a better position at all, but that's their main way of viewing lowering cost and creating some sort of a cost-based competitive advantage.
And you're probably right there. You know, I hadn't really thought of what, you know, I'm not a normal person, so I don't see things normally, I guess. But you're right. You know, if you're losing money on 100 cows, you can lose twice as much on 200 cows. You know, until you figure out how to make money, it doesn't really matter how big you are. And, you know, I think lowering your cost becomes one of those things where we concentrate on increasing production per acre, not per cow. We concentrate on working with nature, not against nature. We let a cow be a cow, you know, make her work for her own living. And, you know, if I can increase production per cow or per acre by 100%, double it, you know, basically without any of more inputs, you know, this includes some rotational grazing. It includes the right size and type of cows. It includes calving in sync with your forage resources. It includes a lot of things. But once you can reduce your cost of production by half, even in a low market year, you're still profitable.
Well, it's interesting because, yeah, I mean, if a guy's sitting there with 100 or 200 cows is looking at the neighbor with 1,000 cows and says, yeah, well, he can spread that new tractor and feed mixer and haybine across 1,000 cows, I'll never be able to compete with him. Well, we're not even talking about trying to compete like that. We're just saying get rid of the combine, get rid of the tractor, get rid of the haybine, get rid of the tractor, get rid of the feed mixer entirely. It doesn't matter if you're 100 or 200 cows. If your overhead is so low, you don't have to spread it over anything, you know, to be profitable. One cow managed the right way theoretically should be able to be profitable.
We forget that cow-calf producers are in the solar energy business. Mm-hmm. You know, we take solar energy and we convert it into a high-quality food product. And the less iron and fuel that we have between the sun and the cow, the more profitable we're going to be. So, yeah, a guy with 1,000 cows can have more equipment, but why have that equipment anyway? You know, we can be a bare minimum amount of equipment and let, you know, run a cow like a cow should be run.
That makes a lot of sense. And then if you can, like you were talking about there, saying once you figured out how to be profitable, you can scale it even more profitably. Like there's no reason a 100 cow producer can't be profitable and stuff. And if he's not competing on trying to spread the overhead cost, but there's also no reason a 1,000 head producer can't get rid of the overhead cost and even be more profitable.
Exactly right. And I've noticed, you know, once you learn how to have that competitive advantage, cost advantage, you're going to be the one when land comes available for rent, land comes available for sale, you're going to be the only one in your neighborhood that can afford that land at whatever cost. Land prices in agriculture are totally out of line. It's almost impossible to make money with agriculture production. But if your cost of production is half, you have a huge competitive advantage. You can increase the size of your operation. You can create an opportunity for the next generation and the generation after that. All of that just kind of excites me, but most people miss the whole point. So the other advantage, that's a cost advantage, and I think it's probably the easiest one to take advantage of if you want to. However, you know, again, most people in agriculture are not going to do that. It requires thinking outside the box, and most people just don't. They like it that box that they're in. They like the comfort of staying there, and unfortunately, they will stay there. Unfortunately, a lot of family farms and ranches will not be passed on to the next generation, and you know that saddens me. But everybody has the same opportunity, but you got to get out of the box to take advantage of it. So the next of the two types of primary competitive advantages, the next one is a differential advantage. And that's going to be created when a product, your product, differs from competing products and is perceived to be superior to the competing products. So let's talk about beef production, cow-calf producer level. Many of our customers, many of our customers, for example, produce and market grass-finished beef. Now, that is perceived by most consumers as being a higher value, healthier product, everything else than what the commodity industry is producing, which is just, you know, feedlot production. Mm-hmm. So when you're producing grass-finished beef, you know, there's a huge demand there that most people don't realize. It does require a little extra work, and you would be a prime example of telling us how that works. But what you're doing and your wife are, what you and your wife are doing, you know, you're producing a product for less and you're selling it for more because you've got a product that differs from everybody else's.
No, you're exactly right. That's kind of the reason we went down this path and stuff is, like, as a beginning farmer, my wife and I were looking at how can we buy land or, you know, get into this business or something. And we can't afford to go and buy a combine. In our area, there's a lot of cropping and stuff. You know, we can't afford to go and buy a combine, buy a tractor, buy a planter, buy a grain truck and all this stuff and buy the land and compete on a commodity market. Like, this just doesn't work. How can we compete? Well, we looked at these two things. First of all, a grazing-based system that allows us to get into the business with very little infrastructure and overhead. And secondly, how can we compete off of a commodity market? And that's why we went down the grass finishing beef path. In our particular situation with the Twin Cities just an hour away, we have a couple million people market ready to be our customers, and we just needed to produce the product and get the marketing.
Yeah, you know, it's sometimes perceived is not always true. I believe that grass-fed beef is healthier. You know, I prefer grass-fed beef to grain-fed beef, but you know, that really doesn't matter. What matters is what the customer says and thinks, and it's a growing fact right now. You know, I think the only reason anybody would look at a fake hamburger is because they're not real happy with the commodity system, though, you know, the way we produce most of our beef. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of lets somebody like you slip in there and say, okay, all of my product is finished on grass naturally, blah, blah, blah. I think I know that, you know, when COVID came in 2020, you sold out way early, and so did everybody else that was in your business.
Yeah, it was a wild few months there, and I wish we had been prepared for it to take advantage of that opportunity. But yeah, it's just neat because, like you were saying, you're not only forcing yourself to market and to create a premium, but you can do it at a lower cost. I mean, when you combine the two of them, the opportunity is, you know, just tremendous. I mean, you talked about average cost of production being less than half of the national average, which is around $1,000 a head, which I don't think, and probably going up quite a bit this year with, you know, the cost of everything, input and stuff rising, you'll be able to compete even more at the cost level. And then to be able to add a premium to it on top makes business. I mean, it's pretty hard to go broke producing something for cheaper and selling it for more than all of your neighbors.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of this is, you know, you can do one or the other, or you can do both. And you've proven that you can do both. And I kind of ended my article last week or the week before, you know, you and producers like you are my heroes, primarily because you're doing what all your neighbors say is impossible. I mean, your neighbors are going to truck along just like they've always done. They don't have to. I mean, they can look at what you're doing at your young age and say, you know, that's not that hard. Let me look into that. And it isn't that hard. But you're doing what most people are saying is impossible. You know, most people look at this, you know, they make excuses for why they can't do what you're doing, and instead of figuring out how to do it.
And as far as competitive advantages go, I'm kind of thinking on another kind of thing that as you talk about this business transition, when you were talking about the basketball player and stuff, just an obvious competitive advantage is height. You know, I was thinking, what can make us more competitive as business people too? Well, how about more time to manage a business? I mean, we kind of talked about putting more enjoyment and life into your business, your management and stuff too in previous episodes. Like, I mean, how much of a competitive advantage will a producer have who's got adequate time, who only spends a couple hours a day moving one group of cattle versus running all over the place with feed trucks and stuff? You know, how much more of a competitive advantage will they have when they start having free time to allocate towards marketing? Yeah. Maybe that starts, you know, being able to provide that differential advantage because they have the time to dedicate towards marketing. You know, I mean, there's compounding effects that come out of this management that may not be seen on the surface level.
Yeah, I appreciate you pointing that out, because that totally, I hadn't even thought about that in this context. But management, you know, having a business that works for itself, works for you, is superior to having a business that you have to work for. You know, it saddens me to look around, you know, all these people tell me, well, they don't have time to read my emails. They don't have time to do this. They don't have time to do that. Well, if they don't have time to learn new ways of doing things, they're way too busy, you know, and that's sad. They can do what you do. They can do what I do. It's just looking at life differently. They'd rather not do those things. You know, they'd rather their neighbor not catch them in the house drinking a cup of coffee with their shoes off, because that's not, you know, they want their neighbor to think they're out there building fence early in the morning and whatever. But having a business that you manage and it works for you is huge. And yeah, unfortunately, and I think I shared this in another podcast, but in Michael Gerber's E-Myth book, the one quote that got my attention a little over 20 years ago, he says, if your business depends on you, which every rancher farmer says, yeah, my business depends on me. But if your business depends on you, you don't have a business. You have a job and you're working for a lunatic. And yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a huge competitive advantage. If you can just get your head wrapped around that and create a business that's working for you instead of you working for the business.
Yeah. And I think what's neat too is a lot of people, when they hear, you know, the differential advantage, there is most definitely challenges to building a market. I mean, you built a market for your seed stock, and I'm sure you can attest to the fact that it wasn't always easy, or maybe it was for you and you just had that knack for that. But for us anyway, like it is and can be a challenge. And that, you know, like you said, might be an excuse to while all this stuff never works. But the majority of people out there are kind of on a commodity market. And when I talk with people around the Midwest here in a crop-based country, I was like, how can we scale grasslands in a cropping area? And the way we're going to be able to do that is not by telling everybody to go out and market grass-finished beef, because most people don't want to do that. We need to compete kind of with the cropping on levels of profitability, on ease of marketing, and on lifestyle. And this system that you're talking about, kind of the first part of the competitive advantage on a cost advantage, aligns with that. I mean, a commodity producer can still be competitive with their neighbors, not by competing necessarily by needing more scale, but just by switching your business structure. I mean, changing your cattle and your focus and how you're managing, like you said in the past, from kind of a high input, high production to a low input, high profit production. And I think it's important to point out, just to kind of clarify for people if they're thinking this isn't for me because I don't have the time to manage or market or something like that, that you can still be competitive on a commodity market without needing to go down that route just by changing your production model.
Absolutely. You know, the first step for nearly all producers is to work on that cost advantage before you start thinking about a differential advantage. And everybody can do that, you know, but we're going to have to step outside the paradigm that we've been living in and working in for basically the last 50 years. You know, the paradigm has been focused on increasing production per cow. And that is so wrong, it's not even funny. You know, when you get around that and say, okay, I don't need to increase production per cow, I want to increase production per acre. I have a certain amount of land that I'm in control of, whether you own it or don't own it. You know, I still lease probably half the land that we control. It doesn't really matter whether you own it or don't own it. Mm-hmm. But if I can reduce my cost of production by increasing my production per acre, it's huge. We have customers and clients that have more than doubled their production per acre. And this is not just America. I mean, it's in other countries around the world too. So you're right. But until you can break that paradigm that says, I've got to keep buying bulls that's going to increase production per cow, you're never, never, ever going to see that competitive advantage. I talk about this in some of my weekly emails. You know, even though we've been trying as an industry to increase weaning weights for 50 years, we stopped seeing any increase in weaning weights 20 years ago. So we're still trying to do something that's not working. And the reason it's not working is because the environment has its limits. You know, your genetics can only go so far before your environment puts a lid on it and says, we can't increase weaning weights anymore. So rather than worry about increasing individual weaning weights, we need to think about increasing production per acre. And, you know, you and various other people, hundreds of people, have proven that that's possible to do.
No, that great point. Appreciate you sharing it. And you share stuff like this on your update all the time. So I will put another plug in for your update. It's one of the, you know, the few of the many, many emails I feel like I'm signed up for that I actually read on a regular basis. So if that's something you're interested in reading and taking advantage of, check that out on farrowcattle.com. You can just scroll to the bottom and sign up for your weekly update. But I do also want to give you a chance to plug the upcoming sales that you've got coming up this fall. There's two sales, the Colorado and Alabama sale, that have already been completed for this year. But you can talk about the sales you've got coming up, or maybe if you want to address at all how the sales went, the previous sales, and what you're hearing from people, you know, take a couple minutes to share your sales.
Okay. And maybe, you know, this will be an opportunity for me to talk about the differential advantage that we have as bull producers. But yeah, we had four bull sales this fall. Two of them are behind us, two of them are ahead of us. Our Nebraska bull sale, Valentine, Nebraska, is December 4th, Saturday, December 4th. The next Saturday, we have our first ever bull sale in Butte, Montana. And I talk to a lot of new customers. We get a lot of new customers, and that's exciting because these are people that have broke that paradigm. You know, they're saying, you know, I'm tired of break-even ranching. I want to build a business that our kids can continue to build. And when you get to that point, you know, things become easier and easier. When you get out of that first paradigm that's locked you in to no profit, things happen. But our program, and we started in 1985, and you're not old enough to remember what was going on then, but a lot of people are. The beef industry at that time was trying to make cattle as big as they could, as fast as they could. Nothing else mattered. And basically that didn't, you know, that slowed down a little bit in the 90s, but we're still doing the exact same thing as we were, you know, the industry was doing then. My dad was still alive back in that time. I had a good friend, Chip Hines, Don Palmer, others that, you know, we said, you know, this makes absolutely no sense what the industry is doing. And that was an opportunity that I thought was just sitting there waiting for somebody like me to take advantage of. I had just got back to the ranch or that lifestyle in 1985. And we decided, okay, nobody's producing the right kind of cattle to increase production and profit per acre. They're all focused on the wrong thing. All it's doing is making cows bigger. You know, in 50 years, cow size has increased by 40%. No wonder we can't make any money. We can't run as many cows. The cows are eating too much. So, you know, we became we gained a differential advantage way back in the late 1980s, early 90s. It was tough. You know, it wasn't something I could have gotten through by myself. I had support from people like Chip that said, you're on the right track, keep going. I believe that, you know, within the last 10 years, you know, people finally understand. I mean, that's why we're now selling over 1,000 bulls a year. You know, mm-hmm. somebody's figured out what we're doing is right. And it's kind of like everybody wants to get on that train now. But anyway, those two sales are coming up. Again, you can request a sale catalog from our website. As Jared has done, I'd encourage you to sign up for our weekly emails. If you ever get tired of hearing me or listening to what I have to say, you can unsubscribe anytime.
Awesome. No, well, I appreciate that. And thank you for coming on and talking about this. I enjoyed this topic. I think it's one that everyone can and should hear and think about. So thanks, Kit. And I look forward to having you on again sometime soon. The Herd Quitter Podcast is brought to you by Faro Cattle Company, whose mission is to help ranchers put more fun and profit into their business. You can get more information on Faro Cattle Company at farocattle.com. And if you enjoy what you've heard on this podcast, be sure to subscribe and check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Herd Quitter Podcast or at herdquitterpodcast.com.